As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Welcome to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price. Brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub.
There's a lead pass. In on goal. McDavid scores! 3-1 Canada!
Here's the 1-2 pitch from Martinez. Ball hit out into center field. Going back, Marquise Grissom. He's got it! Dennis Martinez has pitched a perfect game.
There's a shot. They score! Duclair! 1-0! 23 seconds in. Canada jumps on top.
Here's the 2-1 pitch. Cordero swings. Base hit. The Expos will win. The Expos will win. Cordero with a base hit to win the ballgame in the bottom of the ninth inning.
The drought is over. Drink it in, Canada. World champions.
And now, here's your host, Elliot Price. Price.
Now put it on.
Put on speaker. Answer it. Put on speaker. Hello? This is he.
Hey, Brock, this is Jack O'Connell with the Baseball Writers Association in New York.
Yes.
And I'm calling to tell you that the writers have elected you to the Hall of Fame.
Congratulations, Rocco.
Thank you so much.
You may not remember, but when the Hawk got in, I was sitting behind you in the crowd, and I told you, you're going to get here someday. I just wish it didn't take so long.
Oh, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate that.
It was fun following along as the Tim Raines Hall of Fame train chugged along at the same rate throughout the last of 2016 and into early 2017 before what turned out to be an inevitable announcement at 6 o'clock today. What the baseball world finally realized is what Montreal fans in this city knew all along. Rock was special. Did things few in history had ever done, that it took him longer because, as many seem to think, he did it out of the larger baseball markets in his very best years, makes it even more special for us here in the city of a deserved franchise. Before internet and full-time sports networks that show every single game, we viewed something special, something our own. We didn't have to share Tim Raines till he got traded. They voted him into baseball's Hall of Fame today because the stats he compiled said he deserved to be there. But we voted him in a long time ago because we got to enjoy the real thing. A stolen base in baseball reference doesn't look like one at Olympic Stadium. The joy of watching the real thing was the real Hall of Fame experience. Thank you, Rock. In the Hall of Fame. Crazy. I started off writing this as a... because I knew Vlad was going to come up short and I knew Raines was going to get in. And it's sort of anticlimactic because of, you know, the constant update of public ballots that we were getting. And I don't know if that's bad or good. We'd have been sitting on pins and needles today. But we weren't, because we all knew. You get 90% of 50%, you're getting in. If you need 75%, I'm a numbers guy. Okay, to me, I was never worried and you see where Vladimir Guerrero is, so he's getting in the Hall of Fame. And you know what? Make it two visits to the Hall. It's good. Let Reigns have his day for Montrealers. It doesn't have to be split up with Vladimir, although for two large sections, right, they're split. It's for different age groups. Vlad was one, Reigns was another, and for those of us that happen to be of a certain age group, it was all. And it's good. It's good. Reigns this time, maybe Vlad next year. We shall see. Canadians underway in Pittsburgh. No score. 7:32 left in period one. Mark Dumont will join us. We'll talk to John Shannon. Did you know? He was announced as a Hall of Famer yesterday. The British Columbia Hockey Hall of Fame. Jay Sportsnet. John Shannon will join us. We'll talk to our resident sports sociologist, as we do every Wednesday night. It's Abby Goldberg. We'll talk franchise moves, and you know, what does it mean? We lost our franchise, but we have another Hall of Famer. We haven't had a team here since 2004, and we're getting our third Hall of Famer in that time. And if you count Pedro, it's four.
That's a lot of Hall of Famers, if you think about that. For a team that is largely forgotten in a sense, and I think you're right. You hit the nail on the head with 2 years is better than one. Now you get this year, right. You get
and
next
that'll
year.
That'll be a fifth Hall of Famer. And, you know, all in thinking that Tyler Kepner, the great sports baseball writer, says he grew up in Detroit. Now, never mind not one guy going to the Hall of Fame that played on that 84 team that won the World Series. No Morris, no Trammell, no Whitaker. Not one player in his lifetime that has played a single moment for the Detroit Tigers has gone to the Hall of Fame. And Tim Raines, what a day. Dave Kaufman, a member of the Expos Nation, one of their kingpins, he will join us coming up just after 9:30. We'll hear from Rock himself and a whole bunch of other stuff. This is a great day. We'll have our opening face-off coming up next. I'm Elliot Price, that's Grant Robinson, and this is Sportsnet Tonight in Montreal.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
You mentioned it off the top. It's obviously the story of the day here in Montreal. And you know what? Everywhere, because he is the Hall of Famer that everybody kind of had their eye on this year to see what would happen. Tim Raines, officially in the Hall of Fame now. For those of us that didn't get a chance to watch him play or to see him, you mentioned earlier, you know, the different generations. I got to see Vladimir Guerrero play, and I was very impressed with him. But for Tim Raines, what made him so special?
A spectacular offensive player. He could steal a base better than anyone in baseball history. Now, wow. He didn't run up the numbers that Ricky Henderson did because he didn't have to. Tim Raines realized stolen base was a weapon that was needed when it was needed. If you were on second base, you didn't have to steal third if you had Andre Dawson and Gary Carter and Ellis Valentine and everybody else coming up after that. You needed to get into scoring position, and those guys will drive you in. The Expos had a different team during those days. He would have run up a ridiculous amount. But the fact of the matter is, his stolen base numbers, and compared to the great Ricky Henderson, are spectacular because he never got caught. I'm sure if you take out Ricky's two worst seasons, you might have, as far as getting caught stealing is concerned, you might have Tim's whole career.
Wow.
He was a player you did not. Now that's just the base running. He was a guy you didn't want to face in a game situation. And you didn't want to face him from either side of the plate. He was a spectacular offensive player, as good at getting a run as any player in his career.
And before I kind of move on, was he your favorite? Who is your favorite Expo
Andre
of
Dawson.
All time? Andre Dawson?
And then Raines. I mean, Raines and Dawson. I mean,
but they're all good.
So
it's not insulting
Gary
someone,
Carter,
right?
And Pedro Martinez and No, it's not. There were so many. It's almost an insult to pick out one.
For a team that wasn't around that long, you know, you think about that.
You know, 1969 to 2004.
No, but they don't still have it. And you mentioned the other day the Tigers, right?
Yeah.
How many years? These guys are all from the same time that you're describing, you know, that you got to see. And it truly shows, you know, the people that say, you know, they should have had or they could have had the World Series that year. I mean, look at the talent.
The problem for that team was that there was no wild card. If there had been a wild card during the days of 1979 through 1983, then the Expos would have gone to the postseason five times. And so it just didn't exist. You had to finish in first place. Only two teams finished in first place, and that's it.
And teams complain now about the wild card game.
What's that?
And now teams complain about the wild card game.
Look how many teams had won the World Series by getting in there from the wild card. If you didn't finish first, there are teams that won 100 games, didn't go to the playoffs.
So here, and again, this is not to take away from him. I'm just trying to understand, because again, I didn't get to see it, right? So for me, I look at Vladimir Guerrero and the push to get him in, and I understand it. I saw, but what do you think led to the overwhelming support in this city to push him into the Hall of Fame? Because there was a big push right now. Is it just how electric he was and how great of a player he was? Or do you think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the Expos are gone now?
No.
And this is a way to...
No, Tim Raines deserved to be a Hall of Famer. And this is the way it goes. The progression was the same for Jim Rice. The progression was the same for Andre Dawson. There's something about guys getting closer to, and now is the time or not.
Or never,
where you push him over the edge. I was just looking at the numbers, and it's hard to believe that Rock went 40-something to 50-something, and then he went back to 40-something, and you figure that's not a good sign. But he went from 55 to 69 to 89, to 86 in the last 3 years.
So it wasn't even close this year.
I don't know. Obviously, our good friend Jonah Carey, in lobbying for Tim Raines, had a hand in it. But the fact of the matter is, Tim Raines deserves to be a Hall of Famer. And so he's going where he earned a spot. So,
no,
and so good on the voters, and good on Rock, and good on everybody. It's a special day.
So before I move on from, what does this mean for Expos fans? Is it different than any of the others? Is it big because it's the fourth?
No. It's as good as Gary. It's as good as the Kid. It's as good as the Hawk. And now it's the Rock. It's as good as Pedro. It's the Hall of Fame. You are one of the greatest players who ever played the game.
I don't think there's a bigger honor in any sport, right? To be called a Hall of Famer that's the ultimate compliment, right? And he has it now, and we pretty much saw the way this year's vote went. Vladimir Guerrero is a lock. It'll probably happen next year, right? With how close he was. If not next year, definitely the one after. But so since he's going in, not this year, but he will for sure. The argument now is, right, well, which team is he going to represent when he goes in? Do you think there's an argument to be had there? Because I look at it, I'm not an Expos fan.
Yep.
I mean, I liked seeing them play. You know, when they were here, it was a nice afternoon. I definitely wish it was still here. And I didn't like them, and I loved. Vladimir Guerrero was so fun to watch. And to me, he made me like the Expos. Do you know what I mean? I had to cheer for them because he was so good. And I look at it, I watched him play with the Angels. I know he won an MVP there, which a lot of people...
He went to the postseason. He won an MVP. His time was split evenly. I suppose the Angels can claim him. But the fact of the matter is, he started his career. The Expos found him.
And
the Expos brought him up through the minor leagues. The Expos promoted him from Double A. We heard about this Vladimir Guerrero guy. He's coming.
Yeah.
The Angels bought him from Montreal.
Well, that's what I mean. They kind of got what he already was. And I'll say this, too. I know everybody brings up his MVP. I was looking at the stats just before. This isn't off the top of my head, obviously. His career high for home runs was in Montreal with 44. Career high batting average in Montreal. Career high RBIs, triples, doubles, all here in Montreal. And stolen bases, did you see those numbers? He had 40 here 1 year in Montreal.
Yeah, I was the broadcaster.
50. No, but I'm saying the LA numbers is what shocked me.
Yeah.
He had 50 in 6 years there. You know, he had more in 1 year.
No, because he wasn't the same guy anymore. There's a whole bunch of those guys.
But that's
After a while, they stop running. That's the amazing thing about guys like Raines.
They keep
the years absolutely kill the legs. Like, and then to keep on going. I mean, what did I hear? Rain stole 40 bases like 11 times or something stupid?
That's unbelievable. Yeah. And look, you remember Guerrero running into the wall, right? Like, man, to me, I saw Vladimir Guerrero do incredible things here. I saw him be very good in L.A. I just, and maybe that's partial because I'm from Montreal, but.
There's an argument.
What do you think? What does your gut say?
No,
what's going to happen?
He should be a Montreal Expo.
All right. I like that. Jeff Bagwell, the other, I guess, name of the day, made it into the Hall of Fame despite, I'm not going to say, I don't think it was confirmed, but a lot of people believe there was steroids involved.
There is no proof.
No, but a lot of people think that his votes were taken away because of that. A lot of voters didn't vote for him because of the question mark. Now, like you said, he's not, there's no, that's why I said, rumors or whatever it is or questions don't mean anything, and I agree with you with that.
Yeah, but Piazza already got in. So Piazza was also a rumor guy. So once Mike Piazza's in, then you got another rumor guy. Rumors are not fact. And besides, we're at the point now during that era where there are so many. There's some we know, but there's hundreds we don't know.
So is it time for the rest to get in,
no.
in your opinion?
No.
I thought that's where you were going with this.
But there is.
Because you were caught. So if it were up to you, the steroids.
There is not even a shred of evidence against Jeff Bagwell other than rumor.
No,
and that's not good enough.
That's a different story.
Barry Bonds, we know. That he used steroids. It's 100%.
Yeah, that's
Roger Clemens is 100%.
So Maguire.
Clemens, Bonds didn't know what he was taking.
Wow.
Whatever, I'm just saying.
But you wouldn't put these guys in?
I wouldn't vote for them, but they'll get in.
For me, and I'm fine with the, kind of taking aside. For me, Hall of Fame is not, even Pete Rose, I think that's a joke as well. I understand what he did, but to me, Hall of Fame is the best players that have ever played. And when you don't have guys like Bonds and Clemens in there, I don't see it how it makes sense. I understand.
Because of steroids, okay, the numbers, which is essential to baseball, is ruined.
The home runs, fair.
Absolutely ruined. No one is ever going to break the home run record. Nobody is ever going to come close. And those are numbers that shouldn't be there.
No one should ever hit
73 home runs. No one should ever, no one should hit 70, no one should hit 73. And
but baseball
was done,
right? Bud Selig knew what was going on.
He didn't know from day one.
No,
he
that's
knew
fair.
After
that's
the
fair.
Fact. And then he tried to whatever. It happened on his watch. So what? So he should or he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. That doesn't
I don't think
make
anybody cares about
Barry
that,
Bonds or Roger Clemens. Because he's getting in, so now you're okay with the other guys, but you weren't before? That's pretty stupid reasoning if you ask me. I'm okay if you say Barry Bonds was a Hall of Famer. Before he ever started using steroids, I vote for Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame. I may not agree that I would vote for him, but I'm okay with you voting for him on that criteria. If you're voting for him now because you weren't going to vote for him, but because the commissioner's getting in, you think it's okay,
I think that's stupid. I agree with you 100%. First of all, the non-players that get voted in, I don't consider it the same thing. I don't consider it the same honor. But either way, last one here. We'll move away from the Hall of Fame here. Julian Edelman, Patriots receiver, we talked about how stupid the video was, how big of a deal it was made out of. He got asked about it, and answers, which is fine, but goes on to kind of throw a little bit of, judgment the way of the Steelers by saying maybe that's how they run things over there. That would never happen in our locker room, and if it were me, after a big win like that, I wouldn't be worried about anything but being with my teammates, yada, yada, yada. I mean, again, we saw the video. Antonio Brown's not out, whatever. Does this bother you, the comments you made? Because Ben Roethlisberger took some, he went on to say our Lombardi trophies speak for themselves. Does it bother you what Edelman said?
No.
I'll say this, it bothers me because of who said it. The New England Patriots, you're talking about, they won and he's happy and he celebrated and he made a video, right? He did something, he was very happy about a win. Who is the biggest guy who draws attention to himself in the NFL that has nothing to do with it? Rob Gronkowski is like, he's going on party boats. He did a whole cruise this summer of just partying 24/7. Julian Edelman, you remember him when he won the Super Bowl? Did he just stay with his teammates? Do nothing else? He wasn't at Harvard stripping. And now, I'm not saying this is a problem. I win a Super Bowl. I'm going. Okay, I'm doing way worse.
But this didn't happen last week. You're not playing that team now. You didn't do it in a divisional win. And you pretty much look stupid. Say whatever you want about
Antonio
Brown.
Did look stupid.
He looked like a total goofball.
I agree.
And it ran on. And it, like, so what was he saying? There's 40K. Watch. Hey, almost a million people ended up watching that
yeah.
video. But you know what? Good on Julian Edelman. He gets to pile on now. The guy put himself in a bad position, and you get to say stuff.
I'll just say this. It's Do not throw rocks when you live in a glass house. Julian Edelman's been caught cheating on his girlfriend on Tinder. I mean,
whatever.
He is the worst.
So now what? So now the Steelers get to say, hey, you got caught on Tinder. You know what? You put yourself in that position. The other guy, so now you want to come back with something? Go ahead.
But I'm excited to hear Bill Belichick's comment on it.
You don't like to hear stuff about you?
Oh.
Don't do stupid stuff.
Hold on. Last thing.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick,
yeah.
Just to kind of add to this. Did you hear his comments again? Oh, I'm not on Snapface.
Yep.
And he's messing up the names on purpose.
He's Don Cherry.
Like but do you believe he doesn't know what they are still? Because this is like the third time he does it.
Yeah, I believe he lives in a dungeon.
I'm not buying it.
Under Kraft's house, right?
He's only let out game days.
No, there's rows and rows of game film.
And he just watches.
That's what he does.
He just watches.
That's it.
And that's how you get successful.
Wait till you see the documentary, The Life and Times of
Bill in the Dungeon.
That's right. Bill in the
Dungeon. Bill. That's what we'll call.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Congratulations. Go ahead and describe. I have to start off with the phone call. Where were you? Who was around you? And your emotions after you received it.
Well, I was at my home with my family, my girls, my wife, and we got the call. My mother-in-law and father-in-law and my agent, Randy Grossman. We were just sitting around hoping that the phone would ring, and when it rung, a lot of excitement.
Tim Raines, Hall of Fame call, came today. Did you like the ring of his phone? Did you catch that? Here's what Tim Raines' phone sounds like. That's how the phone rang. It's not like the old days.
The generic, right. He's got an iPhone, I can tell you that now,
to
that.
He was going to be on television, he knew the ring was going to be on there, so maybe he took off the normal Raines ring. But that's the one that rang on television when Rock got the call. All right, the Canadians against the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight. Penguins scored in the first period. They lead 1-0. Sidney Crosby against a coach he knows very well.
To be honest, I'm not surprised. I mean, I think he's been successful, you know, at every level, wherever he's coached, and you know, being with him here in Pittsburgh, I think that he has high expectations of his teams. He loves to win, and I'm not surprised by that. Well, I think that the biggest thing is he gave me a lot of responsibility early, and I think that, you know, there's kind of a lot of schools of thought as far as, you know, when you're a young player and development and things like that, but I feel like, you know, everybody's different, and I think for me, he put a lot of responsibility on my shoulders and, you know, created a lot of expectation even, you know, within our team or within myself. So I think that was important, you know, to have that confidence from your coach at a young age that, you know, you believe that, you know, you can do, you know, great things at a young age and be successful, and to give you that vote of confidence, I think, is huge. So I think that was really important as far as, you know, starting out in the NHL.
Sidney Crosby has never had a bad word about Michel Therrien.
It's very true. I've never heard. He's always given rave reviews, if anything.
All right, you feel better today about Morgan Rielly?
I feel, well, like I said, he came back. Yeah. I thought it was going to be day-to-day. Looks like he might be okay for the weekend.
Whenever you go down awkwardly and you don't really know what happened, you know, you get a bit concerned. But, you know, we have great staff here in Toronto, and the doctors took good care of it, and I think we have a pretty good idea of what's going on. But, you know, right now it's day-to-day, so that's good news.
Yeah, it was scary. obviously. I mean, the leg buckled under him and turned out to be the ankle, and he's back. You know who else is back? Well, not in the lineup, but on the ice. Patrick Laine. Here's his coach in Winnipeg, Paul Maurice.
Just skated with our fitness director, yeah.
So is that just a step?
Yes. Right, so it gets through to the point that we're comfortable. He gets back on the ice. So all the things that have gone on, the light bike rides, he got through and is fine. So this is the next phase. He gets back on the ice, and we'll see how he feels tomorrow to decide whether he's going on or not. And then you just start augmenting it a little bit every day. So that's a good sign.
You still can't really set a timetable, but like you say,
no, I mean, even right to the very end, because the last thing will be full contact practice and a good old tug. And we've had players in the past just blow through the first part, get to that, and hold there for a long time. Or if you present any kind of symptom in that, you're back to square one. So you're, there's no time frame for you.
And if you're a hockey fan, you got your fingers crossed. This is one of the exciting players in the National Hockey League, and he needs to stay there to have that race with Austin Matthews. That was supposed to be this year. Looked like we were on our way. So get healthy, get back in there, and get back on it and start filling the nets again, Patrick Laine. Meanwhile, Toronto Blue Jays, they get Batista back. Here's the manager, John Gibbons, this morning on the Blair Show in Toronto.
Jose's a guy, you know, everybody's always liked. You know, he's been big for the team, but I think going into the free agency, nobody really knew what he was looking for, what the market was going to dictate and all that. And they eventually came to terms. You know, I've said before that, you know, Jose's probably one of the most, definitely one of the most motivated individuals I've ever been around. You know, he's always on a mission to prove just how good he is, and I think coming back under these circumstances, and he's going to be motivated that much more, and he'll end up having a big, big year. You know, he was banged up a little bit last year, a couple freak injuries, you know, hurt his overall numbers, there's no doubt about that. But he still did some very big things for us, and I never count this guy out, man. Mm-hmm. He's just motivated that way, more so than anybody else I've ever been around, and I think he'll rise to the occasion.
Not exactly back on the chain gang, but what can I say? Batista back in Toronto now. What do they have left to do? Hopefully we'll get to more John Gibbons in the next hour and find out what the plans are now that they have a few other things to fill in, right? So we'll see. Definitely Tim Raines talk coming up. We'll talk to Dave Kaufman from Expos Nation, and we'll hear from Rock a little bit more from the call today. Call from the Hall. Tim Raines in the Hall of Fame. By the way, Jeff Bagwell and Yvonne Rodriguez also in Baseball's Hall of Fame. Rodriguez just slipping in, and Vladimir Guerrero and Trevor Hoffman just lagging behind. So they're going to be in the Hall of Fame, just not this year. Imagine five guys this year. That's too much. Three's already in.
Three's a crowd.
It's good enough.
That's what they say.
Three's all right. Not the Hall of Fame. Please, not a crowd. All right, Grant's got an update, and we'll talk hockey, Habs, with Mark Dumont. Although we should probably let the second period start, that way the goals can start coming, because they do when Mark joins us from Habs Eyes on the Prize. You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight. I'm Elliot Price. This is CFMB 1280 AM in Montreal.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, Sportsnet Tonight. Talking hockey. You know, the home team in red, white, and blue.
Well, they better hurry up and get going, because when Mark is on, the goals come quick. There will be goals. Mark Dumont. The managing editor from Habs Eyes on the Prize. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Not too bad, Elliot. And yourself?
I'm all right. Anything? Tim Raines, anything?
Oh, well, you know, this is going to disappoint you a little bit, but I was a Blue Jays fan my whole life. So, although I do appreciate Tim Raines, I mean, dominant player for almost an entire decade. And it, frankly, it's laughable it took him this long to get in. So, it's a great night for Expos Nation.
How old are you?
I am 33.
Okay, so you never saw him play.
No. I saw a little bit, but not during his dominant era. Yeah. I'll give you that. I didn't see him dominate throughout almost 10 years. That's a given.
So you're born in what, like 84 or something silly? What
year? 83.
All right.
So yeah.
He was, yeah. I get it. All right. Montreal Canadiens tonight, Pittsburgh Penguins. And what'd you glean from period number one?
I thought it was a pretty exciting period, and one of the things that struck me the most, Elliot, was both teams are pretty darn good at activating their defense. We saw it on the Ian Cole goal. We saw it on when Zach Redmond set up Torrey Mitchell for that amazing one-timer that Mitchell completely failed on. We saw it a few other times throughout the period, so it was really nice to see the puck move up the ice so quickly, and a lot of it was coming from the defenseman.
You mentioned Redmond, and obviously Andrei Markov is coming back, and that means, you know, you got five that you expect are going to be out there every single night, and that leaves a job. So is it, you know, mix and match, or who do you think is in the spot for number six right now that's going to get more playing time, or is there one guy?
I think Mark Barberio is the guy that has the leg up on, let's say, you know, the others. So I'm including guys like Redmond, Johnston, Patterson in that group. I think he's really the guy that can probably help the Canadians the most right now, just because, again, he moves the puck so well. But he does make mistakes, and I know the coach doesn't like that. Compared to Johnston, I don't think he's quite NHL ready. And Redmond, again, he's proved that he's been quite good, but I don't think we've seen as many solid plays as we've seen from Barberio. He's a little less exciting. He takes a little fewer chances. So to me, I like what Barberio brings to the table, but I'd understand if Michel Therrien would lean more towards Zach Redmond, because he's probably a little more secure in that he takes fewer chances.
David Desharnais returned to practice today. Obviously good signs to have guys back, and he can obviously contribute in some sense, but when healthy, do you see him being inserted right back into the lineup? And if so, whose spot would he be taking?
That's a really good question that I was asking myself today when I saw the report of him skating. I don't think you move Alex Galchenyuk out of that line. The chemistry with Radulov is fantastic. And then you have Philippe Danault, who deserves a top nine spot. He's been playing like a top nine center, and a lot hinges on Philippe Danault moving forward. So I think he also has his spot in the top nine. And then you're down to who's going to be that shutdown defenseman, shutdown center. I think Thomas Plekanec is obviously much better suited for that role, and he's been playing really well alongside Lekkonen lately. We saw in the first period they had a pretty dominant shift in the offensive zone. So I guess that leaves David Desharnais on the wing, and where he fits is anyone's guess right now. I honestly don't see where David Desharnais fits in the lineup right now. If anything, maybe a fourth line winger, but how effective can he be in that position? He needs to have offensive zone starts. He needs power play time. He needs to play with really good players. I just don't know where David Desharnais fits in this lineup.
So here's my plan, and I've mentioned it before. If he doesn't fit, and you're looking to add a player, and there's only so much financial room when it comes to the cap, you need somebody to take this guy off your hands. Now, obviously, someone can use him somewhere if they have cap room, and his contract comes to an end this year. Is that something you see as a possibility before the season comes to a close?
I think that's somewhat wishful thinking, Elliot, and the reason why is, from what I've heard, for all intents and purposes, the Canadians have tried to trade David Desharnais for about 2 years now, and there are no takers. So if you're going to move that $3.5 million, which you know, if he doesn't have a role in the team, you have to. You can't leave dead cap space like that. So if you move his contract, I think you're going to have to move an asset along with it for someone to eat it. Not a big asset, maybe some sort of draft pick just to convince the team to take him off your hands, even if it's
not,
1 year.
He's not a $3.5 million liability anymore. As this season ticks away, so does the rest of whatever's left on his contract. So it's not like you're forcing a team to take on $3.5 million. There's a limited amount there, and anything that I think a team that has an opportunity to fill in a salary cap that they have, and you can, in this day and age now with the new rules, you can keep paying him some of it if you want. You give them a minor asset. I think anything anybody can get at this time of year. They really, if they're going to add someone big, then they're going to need the cap space.
Yeah, and that, there's no question of that. And the solution that most people would have had to start the season is you move a guy like Emlyn.
Right.
But you can't do that anymore.
Nope.
So no matter what, unless it's a guy like Thomas Plekanec, he might have some sort of a market out there for him. But if you don't replace Plekanec with a strong center, I don't think you've necessarily improved your team there. So it comes down to those two centermen. And I obviously, just due to his contract being smaller than Plekanec, I think you might be able to find someone to bite on Dernier, but I don't think it'll come for free, Elliot, and I don't expect anything in return. I think you'll have to pay to get rid of him.
Obviously.
I keep hearing the Habs are looking for a puck-moving defenseman. We heard Bergevin say it himself. And like you said, almost every team is. But you already have Markov once he's back healthy. Petrie, you've mentioned yourself on the show how great he's been this year. Beaulieu, to me, should be the third. Am I wrong to see this as a lack of faith in Nathan Beaulieu, who seems to be struggling to cement his spot in one of the pairings?
I think so. And I don't know how much of that is of his doing. And of the team's doing, he's never had a consistent opportunity to play in the top four. But at the same time, when he does get those few opportunities, he does tend to make some glaring mistakes that maybe make you think, hey, he's not ready for these heavy minutes. So right now, I think if the Canadians can upgrade and if they can use Nathan Beaulieu to do it, they'll be willing to make a trade surrounding their young defenseman. The question remains with him is, will he ever arrive? But right now, I personally think the Canadians are in a fairly restricted area where they need players to make an impact now. So they might have to sacrifice some potential for a solid defenseman, getting a solid defenseman in return. And honestly, I don't know how much Nathan Beaulieu has in terms of value on the trade market. So even him as a centerpiece wouldn't be enough, in my opinion, to get back a guy like, let's say, Kevin Chattenkirk.
No, and, you know, I thought Ryan Dixon from Sportsnet, he'll join us tomorrow night, made a great point. When we were talking about last week, we're talking about the trade that happened the same day as PK. And obviously Taylor Hall was a large price to pay for a defenseman that Edmonton got back, but that's going to be the price. Teams are not moving defensemen. They just, if you have a defenseman that moves the puck, that is in his prime right now, you're not getting him. And so the price is going to have to be, you're giving up more than you're getting.
Yeah, and really with the Canadians right now is they don't have much in terms of assets that they can move. The only guy I see interesting other teams for like a big piece, like an important player, Elliot, the only guy I think that would really interest teams is Sergachev.
Not happening.
Exactly. That's the way I look at it as well. So, I mean, what are you going to get for, let's say, your first round pick, Noah Juulsen and Nathan Beaulieu? I don't think you'll get an elite player, but you could maybe find some talent out there.
Now, you see, now that's where I disagree, because we just talked about the price for puck-moving defensemen, and very often people in Montreal, when they talk about trades, will completely overrate their guys. But Beaulieu fits into that category, doesn't he? I mean, he would be overrated by other teams.
Is he a top four defenseman, though? That's the question.
It doesn't matter. All you have to have, all you need is for one general manager that has the player that you want to believe that he is.
Yeah, you know, you're right there. And that'll be the key for his trade value is you say, hey, this guy has the potential to become a top four defenseman.
Right.
But if you're selling it that way, then one has to wonder, why are you trying to trade your future top four defenseman? So it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah. I would think that the argument...
I thought Beaulieu was gone this summer, right, to be honest. I thought he was the first guy out, so I'm surprised he's made it this far.
Right. I believe the argument would be because he's not there yet, and we think we can win now, so we need the guy that's there now. That would be the argument. Hey, you know what? If Bergevin needs me, I will do the talking.
No, that's fair enough. You might be able to get some good deals there. But hey, you know what he might need more than anything? And yeah. I know we keep complaining about this, consistency.
Right.
He has to be able to make some errors and not be taken off that top pairing. He needs to be able to have a bad night, a bad week, and then still go back to him. I think a little bit of confidence would do him some good, but confidence from the coach.
Okay. Nothing happened. No goals. What is the matter with you?
Although Emelin scored night after our last episode, so that's not bad.
I was going to I was out and I saw that and I said he strikes again. Look at
I'm
him.
I'm going to claim that scored. One. That one, I get to claim it, I think.
You know what?
He could have scored in a 10-game period. We would have given it to you.
I mentioned it a couple of times that when we had Eric Engels on last week. When did the Penguins play the Capitals? It was Monday night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. They scored 3 times during one of his answers.
Jeez, who doesn't want to see that in the playoffs, right?
There you go. I kept you on
kept
a little
them on
longer.
Too long, yeah.
Penguins scored.
Yeah, but usually it's the Habs.
I know. I know. All right. Thank you, Mark.
All right. Have a good day, guys.
Once a week, the managing editor from Habs Eyes on the Prize, Mark Dumont. Joins us.
Mistake by Radulov, by the way. I think that's the first time I've seen him look bad on a play.
He just got out of the box. He was the guy in the penalty box, Tripp Sidney. Oh.
I'd like to see the look Therrien gives on the
please.
Way back.
He loves that's Radulov.
He's very look at Radulov in the
scary,
face.
Eh?
That's one guy I wouldn't want to have a staring contest with.
No,
forget fight.
You want to,
I'm not. It's just I don't want to stare at him.
You want to bring him with you on Halloween?
Yeah. Eh? Yeah. He looks ghoulish almost.
Hey, we'll take all the candies. Yes, sir. Very well. John Shannon. Hey, Tim Raines not the only Hall of Famer named in the last 24 hours whose voice you'll hear on this station. John Shannon is going into the BC Hockey Hall of Fame. We'll talk to him coming up next. This is Sportsnet Tonight. I'm Elliot Price.
Playing hurt? Baby, that don't faze me. I don't got time for pain. The only pain I got time for is the pain I put on fools who don't know what time it is. Sure, I check a few fools. I give them the pain. But sometimes it's about intimidation, you know? It's mind games.
Elliot Price, gravy hamburgers and fries.
Worlds are colliding!
Elliot Price, gravy hamburgers and fries.
That's no tragedy.
Ça va fonctionner.
John Shannon coming right up, and we'll talk to him about his future induction into the BC Hall of Fame. I'm looking at some of the other names, and it hurts. You don't know Tony Tanti.
No, I don't.
But the Blackhawks, I think about the terrible trades. You know, I've told you about like the worst trade in hockey history, right? Which was the trade of Phil Esposito by the Blackhawks. But Chicago traded Tony Tanti. He was drafted 12th overall by the Hawks. And they traded him. He scored no goals in 2 games. Then he played 1 game, and then they traded him to Vancouver. He scored 8 goals in 39 games, and then the next year he scored 45 goals for the Vancouver Canucks. And he had a string with the Canucks of 45, 39, 39, 41, and 40.
Pretty impressive.
Pretty impressive.
Not as impressive.
I want to see.
As
I'm
the other
go
Hall
down
of Famer,
here.
Though.
Traded to Vancouver by Chicago for Kurt Fraser. Okay, not the greatest trade in history. Although Fraser did end up as a captain for a short time with Chicago. That hurt. How we doing? Not so good?
He's
got to be
a Hall
there
of
because
Famer
he knows
now,
we're
and then he's,
no,
now he's screening
no,
calls.
No, because he gave me, he sent a Twitter thumbs up earlier today. So John's out there somewhere. Try him again. Try him again. And we'll talk to John Shannon. Who else is on this list? I don't know. Brad Lazarowicz, we know, because he was a National Hockey League linesman for 2,000 games.
I refuse to give any of them credit because I know John now, so he's the top Hall of Famer in this Hall of
Tony
Fame.
Tony Tanti, I just read you.
No, his John national, Shannon. His don't make me read you John seasons. Shannon's bio.
Okay. Go ahead, I'm waiting.
I'm saving it for the speech he's flying me into. Yeah. No, you don't buy that?
No, I'm not buying that at all. All right.
I didn't think so. Didn't think so.
Just the BC Hockey Hall of Fame. So here he is, John Shannon. John, congratulations.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Congratulations. Can you hear me? Okay, you can't hear me. John, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, there you go. Congratulations. We were talking about your future induction into the British Columbia Hockey Hall of Fame. Well done.
Thank you, Elliot. It's very kind of you. Do you want a rehearsal of my speech now, or will you wait a couple of weeks?
Okay, that'd be good.
I want to thank all the little people. Elliot Price is at the top of the list.
There, that's real nice. But you know what? I was looking at the other names, and I cried again. Being a Chicago fan.
Chicago fan, yes, that's... I know.
And
well, Dale, it was a great trade. Dale Talon for Tony Tanti.
No, it was Kurt Fraser.
Oh.
Kurt Fraser for Tony Tanti.
For Tanti.
And Tanti ran off, and it just kills me. 45, 39, 39, 41, and 40 in a five-year span. He averaged over 40 goals a season for Vancouver. And Chicago gave him away. That was at least it wasn't the worst trade in hockey history. Blackhawks did that one with Phil Esposito, but this was a bad one.
I was going to say that one, and maybe the Denny Savard Chris Chelios trade, pretty close too.
No, that's a good one.
Oh, that's the other way. Sorry,
I remember because. Back then I was working at CJAD and I was working with Mitch Melnick and we were on the air the day of the Savard Chelios trade and I said, that's a tremendous trade. And he said, what are you, crazy? I said, Mitch, you know I'm a Hawks fan.
So, good for you.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, thank you very much for the kind words.
All right. So that's great. National Hockey League, bouncing here and the Toronto Maple Leafs. They had a scare last night. I mean, when you watch, the leg go underneath Morgan Rielly, man, not many times you come out of that without a break. It just didn't look good.
No, but it's funny. Sitting and talking to a few guys around the league today, it all goes to conditioning. And a lot of guys, a lot of athletes this day and age have a lot more flexibility than they would say 10 years ago or even the days of Phil Esposito. And a guy like Morgan Rielly, who is a great athlete, has the ability to recover. Now, far from perfect, there's probably a few stretched muscles or tendons or ligaments in there, but at the same time, no breaks and no heart issues. That to me is an indication of what great shape these guys are in. It's a positive way to put a positive spin on a negative story.
I want to talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning because this is the team I've liked.
No,
well, they've been. Okay. If you look at them, they had a ton of injuries last year. They still were a force. Even earlier on this year, they had a lot of injuries, but were still able to hang on. But recently, the Lightning are really struggling. They're outside looking in now. Can you see them pulling it back together and making the playoffs, or is this kind of a lost season?
I think there's underlying stories in Tampa, and I think it's beyond the injuries that they've had and beyond Stamkos not playing. I think you get a real sense of what this team is like when Ben Bishop plays well, like he did against the Kings the other night. He even played well last night against Anaheim, even though they only got a single point. I think that there's a lot going on in Tampa, and whether it's the expectation of guys on their second contracts. And when I talk about expectation, it's the expectation of management and ownership to players that are playing on their bridge deals or their long-term deals as opposed to that entry-level deal when they joined the team from Norfolk. I think there are some real issues there. I really do. I think that's what's going on in Tampa. I think John Cooper's feeling the pressure. I don't think they're going to rebound and make the playoffs. I just think in the end, when you look at the positive teams like Carolina and the Maple Leafs that are making pushes, that Tampa is going to be on the outside. Even Florida, who have played a little better of late, I think may be in better shape once they get guys like Barkov and Bukestad back. So for me, Tampa will be out of the playoffs, and Steve Yzerman, who in my mind is the most competitive person I've ever met in my life, won't be very happy.
All right, Jack Capuano out with the New York Islanders. Apparently he was coaching, and he didn't even know he was out for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, can you believe that?
Yeah, really. I mean, so they'd asked for permission for Gerard Gallant, according to Elliot Friedman, like a couple of weeks ago.
3 weeks ago, for sure. 3 weeks ago, the call came. I think this is probably indicative of where Capuano has been for the last month, a little dead man walking. And when you consider that the firing actually occurred after a 4-0 victory, tells you that they're looking for change. But this is an organization looking for more change than just the coach, Elliot. We're talking about who's going to be the president within 6 or 8 months, who's going to be the manager between now and next October, and who will be the coach. I fully suspect in a system right now that has two men, Garth, and whoever's coaching Dougie Wade at this point, I think we're going to see three. And whether Garth's involved in that, which I suspect he will be, and then a manager, and then a coach. So the Islanders are a work in progress. And I think just firing Capuano at this point was, let's throw some risk at it. And if we win six in a row and we get back in the hunt, great. And if we don't, well, we know where we are.
Well, why the hell would Gerard Gallant want to walk into this? Didn't he just walk into an upper management change that got him thrown out of there? I mean, this is just a mess.
Let's remember, Elliot, he's getting paid for two more years at more than $1.3 million a year. So that's not really tough punishment for a coach. Knowing full well what he did, he's going to get another job.
Yeah.
And perhaps the manager that's going to take over is somebody he knows and trusts. And that's another big part of this. I think... there's no guarantee that Gallant's the guy. I mean, Garth Snow played for Mike Keenan, too. And I know Mike Keenan would be interested in going to the island.
Wow.
But, and why not? Why not? Mike Keenan, look, he's got a record. He's won the Stanley Cup, and he's won in the KHL. Why not at this point? But at the same time, I fully suspect that if Gerard goes there, then we're going to see somebody very familiar as the general manager.
This past week, we've seen some very high-scoring games, some crazy comebacks. You had Habs-Rangers on Saturday. They come back, win 5-4. That one maybe not so much, but then you had the Capitals-Penguins everyone talked about, 8-7, and the Stars-Rangers yesterday. Rangers were down 7-3, pulled Lundqvist. Yep. They almost come back. Just you personally, when you're watching a hockey game, whatever teams they are, do you prefer high-scoring games like that, or would you prefer, you know, the 1-0, 2-1 hard-fought battles?
Like my friend Price, I grew up watching this game in the 70s and 80s. I love 7-5. I love 6-4. You know, I think hockey at this stage, which, you know, for the longest time has always been called a game of mistakes. And when players are tired and players have play back-to-backs and players have bad road trips, there's lots of mistakes. I think you get better goal differentials. You get 6-5. It was 6-5 Chicago, Colorado last night.
Yep.
I mean, you get huge opportunities for teams that make mistakes to give up goals, and I think that's what we're seeing. And I think that it's part of the compacted schedule. It's part of travel, and it's not. In my mind, it's not a bad thing.
He knows me for such a short period of time, and knows me so well.
Well, you're buying me lunch next week.
Well, yeah. I mean, after all, you're going into the BC Hall of Fame, and
no, I'm going to be in Montreal next week.
Yeah, when are you here?
Tuesday, Flames game.
Okay, Tuesday, we'll have lunch.
There you go.
Sounds good to me. All right,
you get to have lunch with a Hall of Famer.
No, we'll take him to Lester's Deli, where you can have the best smoked meat in the world.
Oh yeah. You know what that means? That's Contra. You bugger. That's Contra. That's what that is.
What is that?
I've been in radio a long time too, Elliot. I know what that means.
So that means you don't want the best smoked meat in the world.
I love Montreal smoked meat. Are you kidding me?
Done.
I used to line up at Ben's before it closed.
Talk to you Tuesday.
Have a great night, boys. All
right. There you go. John Shannon is going to have lunch on Tuesday. And then
we'll talk
about it on Wednesday. That's great. All right. Good stuff. Abby Goldberg is coming up. our sports sociologist. We'll be talking about, it's kind of a two-prong attack. Franchises on the move. And we know San Diego's already moved to Los Angeles. Are the Raiders on their way to Vegas? And are the Raiders on their way to Vegas? Because Mark Davis is talking today about rebranding. Can you imagine the Raiders won't be the Raiders? It's the stupidest thing I ever...
No, that's unacceptable.
You asked me the other day, will I still be a fan? Not if they're not the Raiders.
How can you not name them the Raiders?
That's the dumbest thing ever.
Just take another team, then. Don't take one of the most, you know, recognizable logos. Yeah, it definitely is. I played for the Raiders as a kid. Come on, you can't love that logo.
No wonder they didn't win.
Hey, my team did.
I'm thinking West
Provincial,
Island beat the crap
Provincial
out of you.
Was a little bit... Oh, North Shore, by the way. I still have nightmares sometimes.
Yeah, I know. I used to go
at
there.
At a certain
watch
age?
Them kill
oh,
you guys.
My goodness.
Yeah, I know. They had big kids. Some milk. Avi Goldberg on all that and a whole lot more. He's coming up.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go to the pub, ye old orchard pub. Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go to the pub, ye old orchard pub. If you haven't been there, you probably should. Yeah, the beer is cold and the food is good. I think I told my friends in the neighborhood, gotta go, gotta go. Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go to the pub, ye old orchard pub.
Now open on Salaberry and Chateauguay.
You want your money to grow. You want it to be there when the time comes. Let me tell you about Paramount Financial Services and Lauren Rubin at 514-905-0885. He's taken care of my money for years, and I can worry about other things. Does your financial advisor move your money around constantly to make sure he's making money, whether you do or not? Let's not forget, it's your money. And Paramount Financial Services will take care of what's most important, and that's you. Call them at 514-905-0885. It's your money. Grow it for a better future. Paramount Financial Services.
Say goodbye to buffering, guttering, and annoying pop-ups. Say hello to Sportsnet Now, a new way to stream sports without cable TV. Matchups from the MLB, NBA, and the NHL. And more of your favorite Sportsnet programming. Plus, watch every Blue Jays game on any device in true high definition. Your sports, your way, starts now. Visit sportsnet.ca/now to start your free trial.
Another great year at Windmill Heights Golf Club. More work done as the course gets better and better. And more improvements on the way for 2017. Family owned with an ear to their members. You have a suggestion, they'll listen, but chances are they already know. They play their own course. Golf too expensive? Not this year. Call Windmill Heights Golf Club and we'll make it work. I love the ease of travel, the food, and the fact that they won't ask me for more money when the season's over. Great food, great golf, great price, great members. Call Lino Carboni, 514-453-7177, extension 3. 514-453-7177, extension 3. They're creating something special at Windmill Heights Golf Club.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
Avi Goldberg coming up in just a moment. Don't forget to join us for the Sportsnet Central Montreal panel tomorrow. Penguins have just scored. It's 3-0 now. We will talk, obviously, about Tim Raines and the Hall of Fame. It will start off with an interview with our buddy, Jonah Carey. He will join them to start off the show. I'll be on Sean Farrell, Mac Mansouri, original member of Expos Nation and Derek Fage and all that, and a whole lot to talk about. 6:30 on City tomorrow night, and again 11 o'clock on Friday, and then again on Saturday, so you'll want to tune in and see that. It's good to be on TV, but it's good to be on the radio, and it's good to talk to the professor, our sports sociologist, Avi Goldberg. How are you, Avi?
Good, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Doing okay. This is Wednesday, so it means I got a flurry of messages from Avi today. And one of them, it was one of the later ones, after he said he mentioned some of the things he might want to talk about. He wrote, I'd be happy to give my own personal memories of Reigns on this day. And then he said, are you on Spilkas? Which means, are you on pins and needles? And I wasn't, because I'm a numbers guy. And since more than half of the ballots had already come in, and 90% of them were for Reigns, it was hard to believe that less than 60% of the rest of the ballots wouldn't be for him. And so I pretty much had a sure thing feeling for the rest of the day. So I'm asking you, did I ruin it for you? I mean, at that point, were you on Spilkas?
I have to admit, strangely, for the last couple of days, I was actually on Spilkas, because I was especially following your tweet updates about the stats as they were being released, and I agree with everything that you just said, yet, especially maybe given some recent election results where polls said one thing and different results kind of happened.
But these weren't polls. These were 100%. It's not like we were looking at people who might have lied when they were saying what they did. These were actual, you know, 100% true results.
I understand, and I take that. And I did not read, you know, the mechanism for how they were actually releasing the numbers. I guess there was just this, you know, inside part of me that had some fear and some doubt until the official announcement. So yes, in fact, I was on Spilkas.
All right, by the way, you win today, because there's already been two goals scored while you've been on. Andrew Ghetto scores almost from behind the net, kind of a semi wraparound. The Canadians got one back there, down 3-1 against
Big
the Pittsburgh
comeback
Penguins.
Right now, Big
that's it.
Comeback.
That's right. Okay, yeah, while you're on here, so wanted to talk about you know, teams moving from their cities, and we know the pain all too well here in Montreal as we continue to pray for the return of the Montreal Expos. San Diego loses their football team because they won't shell out millions of dollars to build the owner a stadium, even though they are a city that took care of their team. They went to the games. They watched them on television. They had corporate sponsorship, but they didn't have enough when it comes to that sort of thing in stadium. And so the guy picked up his ship and went somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, I started to think about this, actually, because did you not have a series of tweets last week about the Expos and maybe coming back? I seem to... What were your tweets last week about this, the Expos? You had a whole thing going on. Do you remember that?
Yes, but I was the one saying it's not necessarily happening tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was, if I read it correctly, and I admit I only sort of three quarters read it, there was definitely the expression of the, you know, the fans longing for
yes,
the team and the hope. Yeah. So, you know, so the news as of last week, you know, was made me think of this in relation to the Expos, and obviously we still feel the tremendous loss. I don't know if you guys saw today the story of the San Diego Charger, the moving companies in San Diego, who have made an announcement, I think as of earlier today or yesterday, that I forget how many companies it is, but they're saying that they will refuse to move anything having to do with the San Diego Chargers to Los Angeles.
Yes.
As a protest, right? You know, and all that shows, like, you know, some of the different ways in which fans respond when their teams relocate. And then this there's a lot of studies that look at the incredible complexity and the dirty dealings that go into teams either threatening cities to move and teams actually relocating, and there's all kinds of economic analyses of whether, you know, building the new stadium, does it provide an infusion into the city and all this stuff. And there's also research that looks into, you know, the fans' responses and how the fans deal with this. And I couldn't help but think of that, especially in relation to the San Diego Chargers and the poor fans who are losing their teams. But then, of course, also in relation to Tim Raines and the tremendous news of his election to the Hall of Fame today. And just in thinking about how not only with respect to Tim Raines, but especially in his case, how the fans here in Montreal, even though we had our team, you know, taken away from us, it made me think of the different ways in which Tim Raines becomes so important for fans here in Montreal in terms of, you know, kind of keeping memories of their team, keeping memories of the importance of the team to the city. So the Tim Raines, not only staying as a fan of Tim Raines, but cheering especially for his Hall of Fame induction, sociologically, this serves a large purpose for the fans in terms of, you know, keeping their spirit alive and keeping their connection to the team and to the city. And there's a lot of interesting research about different ways that fans over the years from all sorts of cities that have lost their the teams, different ways that fans actually cope with the losses of those teams. And it's actually quite a complex relationship. Fans do a lot of different things when it comes to facing the loss of their team from the city where they're used to having it.
With our sports sociologist, Avi Goldberg, every Wednesday at this time. Often it seems to me that the message is lost in transition. When we didn't get our stadium here, it was a nasty political football that was played out poorly, since the money that was going to be pushed in the direction of a new baseball stadium was going to come off the taxes of players' salaries, and the provincial government went at it by saying, we need money for schools and teachers and hospitals, even though that money would not have existed. And so it was totally mismanaged, which made no sense at all. And my understanding is that, and the reason I bring that up is because this San Diego thing seems to be the same thing. The stadium that they wanted built would have been paid on a tax on tourists. It wouldn't even have come out of the pockets of the locals. And so,
yeah, it is a really similar situation, and the optics of it though are crazy and confusing. So apparently it was planning for a $1.8 billion project. Right. They're talking about a 4% increase in the hotel tax. So yes, there was all this discussion that it wasn't actually going to necessarily directly come from the paying customers or the fans themselves. But nevertheless, the local municipal officials who had given good deals to the San Diego Chargers before, I think as you mentioned, they're operating in a time in which finances in the state of California are simply not very good. And even just the optics of the idea of somehow diverting money that might go to the city, that then the city might in turn be able to turn over to other public things, services that are needed, that was enough to lead to citizens basically to vote pretty strongly against going for this deal that, you know, let's be honest, that the billionaire owner wanted to have in order to basically keep the team in the city. And this leads actually to, you know, there have been such interesting, you might be surprised to hear that there's been actually really interesting studies done of the Hartford Whalers leaving Hartford, the Quebec Nordiques, obviously the Winnipeg Jets, the Houston Oilers back in the day. Those optics and that confusion, you know, it all leads to the fact that, you know, when these things are happening, fans do a number of things in response. Some of the in terms of the ways that fans talk about it, you know, a lot of the fans will talk about a franchise leaving as like a very traumatic experience, as something that disrupts their routine. Some of the language that's used very often is like the type of language that families will use in terms of a divorce, right, between parents. Like they almost talk about the team and the owners as a partner who's cheated on them and who's breaking away. Some fans will talk about it as a death in the as a death in the family and mourn the loss. So the optics are one thing, and the details and the complexities of the negotiations that go on are one thing. But all of these events, of course, well, not of course, but as a sociologist, have made me think about the fans and the function, the way in which, you know, we relate emotionally to the losses of our franchises if they happen to occur.
Abby, hearing you talk about, you know, how, like you said, everybody reacts differently, but there's, you know, it kind of seems like that in the city that's left, you know, is very hurt. It has me wondering about the new city, right? So, for example, this one is leaving San Diego, so you have those people reacting that way, but it's also affecting another city as a new team is coming in. How long do you think it takes for a relocated team to truly become a part of the culture and society of a place it goes? Because obviously you have the honeymoon stage when it first comes, but after that, if you don't have success, sometimes right away the community doesn't really latch on to the new team.
Yeah, this literature that actually looks at it, takes a look at the different types of reactions that can happen. I mean, one thing interesting that can happen is that people in a new city, obviously getting the team, will suddenly have the opportunity to do something to kind of boost their confidence or to build their, let's say, team and city identity. In relation, it might sound cruel, but even in relation to the team that lost the city that lost its team. So while it would be kind of unfortunate to think of, you know, Los Angelinos kind of like turning down their noses at those people from San Diego, some of that happens, right? So in other words, getting a team allows you to identify with the new team at the expense of the loss of the the other city, which is a bit brutal. But then again, on the other hand, and this actually, to be honest with you, I'm not so sure if I've seen this in terms of the research. We know, like, even in a case like right now, there's all this talk about the New York Islanders in Brooklyn, right? That's not even such a great move in terms of distance. The arena itself is crappy. The Islanders franchise has brought all of its mismanagement with it. And there's real talk about not only players, but even fans in Brooklyn not necessarily latching onto that team. We also know that, you know, even though hockey has been going on strong in Tampa Bay and Florida, there's also constant questions about whether, in fact, you know, the local residents, is it, as you said, is it a part of their culture or not? There's still ongoing debates about, you know, the transitory nature of the population in Florida, which may lead to sort of a lack of a good fit between those hockey teams and the citizens or the fans down there. So it really depends. It really depends on the situation. It depends on the region. And you can see those responses and those receptions going in different ways depending upon the exact situation.
With our sports sociologist, the professor, Avi Goldberg, you want to see responses? And your two subjects will meet in Cooperstown because Tim Raines will be there. Expos fans will be busing down, driving down by the bushelful. And the man who had the Expos leave on his watch will be up there.
And so
Montreal Expos baseball fans will get to vent their displeasure at a man who's going to go up to the podium as a Hall of Fame inductee on the same day as Tim Raines. That is going to be a very interesting mix.
It's absolutely interesting to see, you know, what the type of response will be. Believe it or not, this may sound a little bit strange. In the research shows that there are even some fans, when they have their team lost from their city, there are some fans who consciously adopt a kind of like a neutral approach, right? And it's still considered to be a kind of an identity, but it's an identity that's based on kind of trying to be above the fray. Like, yes, we recognize the business. We recognize that these things can happen. It's kind of beyond our control, and we're going to intentionally appear to be very neutral. Something tells me that in this particular case, there will not be too many Montrealers who make the trip to Canton who will want to show that they are neutral in relation to Bud Selig.
Oh, that's not happening. But no, if you're neutral, you just don't exist. If he's up there and you're booing, what is the neutral person doing?
Well, the neutral person still wants to put himself involved in kind of the discussions and debates, but wants to signal to everyone
discussion and debate when you're just giving the guy the raspberry.
That's what my students tell me all the time when I try to talk to them about the sociological significance of sports.
Yeah. All right, Professor. Talk to you next week.
We'll talk to you next week, guys. Right. Bye.
Abby Goldberg. Yeah, I mean, the Raiders have already moved, right? They won Super Bowls in Los Angeles. And then move
but they're
back.
Still the Raiders. I think there's a big difference between moving a team and then you take away. That takes away the identity.
Don't do that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
Can't do
no.
that.
You move the. You want to change a name? Change the Jacksonville Jaguars. Hey. Change a team like
Jaguars.
That.
Jaguars? They're not Jaguars. They're Jaguars.
Jaguars.
Or Jaguars.
Mechanics.
Really. Well, no. the Vegas Gamblers.
I still think it should have been, like, I understand you don't want to call them gamblers, but it should have been something like Aces or Blackjack. Should have had something to do with it.
Vegas Knights.
I understand it, but they had to add the, what, desert.
Golden, no?
Yeah, but I'm saying people were going to say Desert Knights. We'll see. We'll see. You know what? If you don't get any good players there, no one's going to care anyways. The only thing I know
is
to go watch
eventually.
A game in Vegas, and it'll be cheaper than watching the Leafs play here against Montreal. I'll go watch it in Vegas where nothing costs over $70 because they know you're going to gamble.
So eventually, right? I mean, if they move to Vegas, all I have to do is fly to Vegas and watch the Raiders, right?
There you go.
Against anybody.
I'll do that 100%. Imagine that, a week where you get to go. Vegas is the cheapest place in the world if you don't gamble.
Right.
If you don't gamble and you don't like rich restaurants, go to Vegas, you'll have the time of your life. You do either of those two things, you're coming back with your wallet hurting. Life advice from Graham Robinson.
If you play golf there, it's also very expensive.
Really?
That's my understanding.
I've never played golf. Yeah, but then you got to fly with your clubs, too, because you're not renting clubs.
What?
I feel like real good, like people
your,
who...
I understand. I've flown with my clubs before. Why is that such a, you know, expensive proposition?
I don't know. I know extra bags when I fly. It's very, very expensive.
Playing with someone else's clubs. Like going to Vegas to play a beautiful golf course with someone else's clubs. That's
you're
going to
hate your day. Exactly. Me, I can do it. I can golf with someone else's clubs because my golf game isn't very good.
Yeah.
Huh? Yet. Yet.
You have a full bag now? You need any clubs? What do you need?
You gave me that lob wedge, which everybody told me
you
won't be able
wedges.
To. No, but that's the one that I really use, and I'm good with it. I love that club.
It's a good wedge.
Lob wedge, you know, 70 yards out, drop it right on.
Exactly.
It's perfect. That was one of my weakest parts, so.
You owe me.
You got a hole in one right after giving you that. So, karma.
That's right. Golf was paying it back. Tim Raines, Hall of Fame, quite a day. David Kaufman, obviously a huge Expo fan from Expos Nation. We'll also hear the phone call that Rock got to tell him that he's in the Hall of Fame and a whole bunch of other stuff. Baseball conversation coming up after Grant's update. This is Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
You want a piece of me?
Price.
You just mind your P's and Q's, Buster.
Let's rumble!
And remember who you're dealing with.
He's no David Suzuki, but he knows stuff. You're tuned in to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price, right here on 1280 AM Montreal.
Say goodnight to the bad guy.
It's go time.
Yes! You're gonna heat lightning, and you're gonna crack thunder.
Now put it on.
Put on speaker. Answer it, put on speaker.
Hello?
Yeah, hello. May I speak with Tim Raines, please?
This is he.
Hey, Rock, this is Jack O'Connell with the Baseball Writers Association in New York.
Yes.
And I'm calling to tell you that the writers have elected you to the Hall of Fame.
Congratulations, Rocco.
Thank you so much.
You may not remember, but when the Hawk got in, I was sitting behind you in the crowd, and I told you, you're going to get here someday.
Oh, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate that.
Tim Raines got the call today, as it certainly looked like he was going to. And obviously very excited in Montreal. We welcome to the show Dave Kaufman. How you doing, Dave?
Hi, Elliot. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's so nice to have you on our show.
A real thrill. Thank you. Honored that you reached out. This feels like Christmas morning, doesn't it?
So where does...
I think it feels like Christmas morning.
Yeah, it is. It's just one of those great celebrations for our, not only for that, but for our hope and dreams of the future of baseball here. I mean, it really depends on your age, where you sit with Raines. And compare Raines and Vlad, not as players, but in where you came in as a baseball fan.
Raines is, you know, I was really young, obviously. I'm born in 1980. So my memories of Raines were as a little kid, him being the superstar on the team. I remember being very sad when he was traded. I have vivid memories of being at Tim Raines' final game the first time around when he was with the Expos and nearly catching a bat. I don't know if you remember this, Elliot, but he had a bat go flying into the stands in the first base dugout, and my grandfather tried to get a hand on it. The guy beside us got it, and then Raines came over and said, look, this is going to be my last game in Montreal. Do you mind if I keep the bat? So the fan gave the bat back to Tim. And I think, for me, obviously, him coming back to Montreal and that incredible the walk that he drew, that standing O, it was legendary. And to know that he's crossed over with all the great Expos through all the years, that he played with really everybody. For Vlad, it's a bit of a different thing for me. For Vlad, I was a kid in my early 20s and really living vicariously through the Expos, knowing that the ship was sinking and knowing that Vladdy Guerrero was going to be a name that I could tell my grandchildren about one day. So I sat there today knowing that Raines would get in, hoping that Vlad would get in. And now I just take comfort in the fact that we're going to have a heck of a party in Cooperstown this summer, and we're going to get to do it all over again next year or the year after for Guerrero.
So it's good, right? I mean, I mentioned earlier, it's good that it's going to be in different years. It would have been cool if Vlad had gotten in as a first ballot Hall of Famer. But you know what? This continuation of Montreal baseball in the news, as long as Vladdy's not in, and obviously with his total, he's getting in. If it's next year or the year after, most likely right. Next year. It's another year. It's another year to keep us pointed in the direction that we need to be going in.
And will be a younger generation of Expos right. fans going to support Vladdy. It'll be the parents going to see Reigns, and the ones who are still young and maybe their last memories of baseball in Montreal will be of Vlad, and they'll be there to support that. And you know what, Elliot? Those are going to be the guys and girls who are going to be buying the tickets when the Expos come back.
With Dave Kaufman from the Expos Nation Committee, and obviously it's going to be some kind of group that goes down. And I wonder, we talked about it with our sports sociologist, an interesting mix when you have the guy who helped build this ball club in Tim Raines during the glory years of the team, and the man that was in charge when the team left, the commissioner of baseball, Bud Selig. He's not likely to get a very friendly ride at any time during this summer when he's going to Cooperstown.
I remember turning my back on Bud Selig at the ceremony in 2010 for Andre Dawson in Cooperstown. I don't know if I'll do the same. He has been more contrite when he's spoken over the last several years about how Montreal can get a team back, that they should get a team back. He's not the big, bad Bud Selig I think that he once was. Perhaps him not being the commissioner has softened it a bit. Or you know what? It still feels like Christmas to me right now, and I'm just so damn happy about Reigns that he'll just be an afterthought.
Tim Raines in the Hall of Fame, did you like the new way of watching how this unfolds? I mean, today we knew, right? If you understand numbers at all, there's no way Tim Raines was not getting in today. When 50-something percent of the vote was already known, and he had 90% of that 55% or so, it was just about impossible that he wasn't getting in today. So when the announcement came, I did have a tear, but I'd have been more than shocked. I'd be more than shocked if he didn't get in today than I was when Trump won the election.
Well, you know, it's funny. That's exactly what I liken it to. My overconfidence that Hillary Clinton was going to beat Donald Trump left me with the smallest thought in my head. Uh-oh, did we Canadians piss off the Russians at any point? Are they going to hack this too? But luckily, we're under their radar, yeah. and nothing happened. And it all went as it should be, which shows you that in some weird way, maybe not in America in the grand scheme of things, definitely not with the Electoral College, but sometimes the baseball writers do their job properly and democracy works.
Dave, Grant Robinson here. When it comes to today, obviously it's a great day for the Expos. You have Reigns going in, but it was a clear sign that Vladimir Guerrero will soon be following. If not next year, then obviously very soon. But where do you stand on the debate that's obviously going to arise of which team Vladimir Guerrero should represent in the Hall of Fame? And in your opinion, will it be the Expos when he inevitably gets in?
I have such a bias in this, Grant. You know, it's really hard for me to... I didn't watch him with the Angels anywhere near as much as I did with Montreal. He was dominant in Montreal. And like I said before, stories that I can tell my grandchildren about, you know, massive bombs that he hit or incredible throws from deep right field to the plate on a hop. Just the most amazing things. And I know that it's got to be more than that. It's the stats. And of course, his numbers in Montreal were amazing. It's a shame that they robbed him of that 40th home run in 2002. If he'd had the 40-40, I think that would be a lock for him to be in Montreal because that's such a rare stat to achieve. The Angels don't have a Hall of Famer. So they're going to be lobbying hard for Vlad Guerrero to be the first Hall of Famer to come out of that franchise. And, well, we know what that debate's like because we saw it with Carter and then we saw it again with Dawson. If anything, it's just a nice moment to know that Tim Raines is unquestionably going in as a Montreal Expo. And we'll save that fight for another day. I know that Guerrero put on his Twitter feed last year, what cap would you like me to wear, and had a Twitter poll. And I believe that it was 80% Expos.
Wow.
So I don't know. You know, it's up to the Hall of Fame now. It's not if the players. Wade Boggs screwed that up when the Devil Rays offered him $1 million to put their hat on his plaque. And the Hall of Fame stepped in and said, no, 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 no. And I guess we'll see. I mean, we've got to hope Expos, and you know, if anything like you guys with your microphones and guys like Jonah with his ink blotter have the ability to push that, I think we'll see Vladimir Guerrero as potentially the final Expo in the Hall of Fame.
As large as California is, and as many people as they have, Expos Nation is a force. So if you're going to pull people, our people are going to come out in force and make it happen. If you leave it up to that, it's again, I liken it to the American election. There may have been a lot more people that wanted the Democrats in, but if you mobilize your people, you will get the vote.
You know, the Anaheim Angels, the Los Angeles Angels, the California Angels will one day have
Mike Trout,
of the top five players of all time,
right,
as a first ballot Hall of Famer. He could arguably be the first unanimous Hall of Famer. So let them be a little patient, and let us hold on to our Vladdy, because he just means so damn much to our city. And we know that the feeling is mutual, that he cares about Montreal. I had an opportunity to hang out with Guerrero last year at Expos Fest. And, you know, you'd be surprised how much English he speaks.
No, I wouldn't.
Well, you wouldn't.
You know what?
You wouldn't. But the average listener might be surprised as to how good his English is. Sort of like Saku Koivu in his French, you know. The media puts unfair pressure on these guys, and they aren't paid to speak. They're paid to play baseball or play hockey. And the thrill of being able to hang out with Guerrero and have a conversation last year, as much as I've loved him before, to have gotten to meet the man and appreciate him and hear him talk about his many, many children was a great thrill. I hope he goes in as an Expo. And you know what? As we saw with Pedro 2 years ago, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. I don't think that there'd be one Montreal baseball fan who would say, oh, he's going in as an Angel. I'm not going to Cooperstown. Forget that. It'll be a party. It will be incredible. Pedro gave so much love to the Expos at his induction ceremony. And, baseball is—it's amazing, EP. I think about when I first met you, when we became friends, when the Expos were done, and I remember going to Shelley Barbecue for lunch with you the winter after the Expos left, interviewing you for a journalism school project that I was doing on baseball leaving Montreal, and how down in the dumps we all were, and here we are, 13 years later, and the future could not look brighter. It's amazing.
Well, I tell you what. Not long after that, I believe that my optimism of baseball returning to Montreal was at not 0.5, at 0%. I would say that at that time, I believed there was never, ever going to be an opportunity for baseball to return to Montreal. And I would think that the people that were in the nevers have to be in the 80s now.
It's amazing to see it. You know, what I would give to hear you and Terry call another ball game. What I would just, to have that ability, whether I'm in Montreal or like I am in England right now, to be able to just turn on my radio and hear you and Terry Haig call a ball game, nothing would make me happier.
Great talking with you. It's been fun watching you evolve over there, and good on you for getting going and getting in. You know, I mean, there you were all of a sudden pontificating on the U.S. election. You'd been there like a minute and a half. That's crazy.
Yeah, well, that's the plan. I'll be back in with them on Inauguration Day and doing some football stuff next week as well. I'll definitely keep you posted, and I cannot wait to celebrate your belated birthday and catch up on some good times next summer in Cooperstown, Elliot.
Keep up the good work. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Have a good night, guys.
Dave Kaufman. Far, far away.
I'll say this, Angels, you want a Hall of Famer?
They have one. Okay. They have one, right?
Well, yeah, Mike Trout. But I'm saying, you know, you're talking about Vladimir Guerrero. You want one? Draft him like you did with Pujols, or with Trout, because you had the same thing with Pujols, right? There's no question when he goes in, he's going in as a Cardinal. Yeah. It's not the Angels.
No. But that's never going to. It's not close, though.
Because he was close. There 10
That's
years,
not close.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't just there 10 years.
He won 3 MVPs.
He was a
get
beast.
What you're saying. But he still hits 40 home runs
doesn't
there.
Matter. No.
The first year he got there, last year.
He was
2 years
terrible
ago.
The first year he got there.
I don't like that.
No, it's not even good. It's not even, that's not.
Just saying, drafts, guys.
That's bad.
It's where you're from. Yeah. You think of Vladimir Guerrero, to me, it's not an Angel. And that's not even because of Montreal.
Let's see the Toronto Blue Jays get Batista back. We'll talk about that. We'll hear from John Gibbons, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. And, of course, every night, your National Hockey League fantasy update before we go. This is Sportsnet Tonight. That's Grant Robinson. I'm Elliot Price, CFMB 1280 AM in Montreal.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome back. That's what they're saying in Toronto to Jose Bautista. No doubt they needed a big bat in the middle of the lineup and it was starting to dwindle a little bit and it almost had to be a corner outfielder. You're not moving Kevin Pillar anywhere. And if you got yourself a first baseman, you still needed corner outfielders. In fact, they're still kind of a corner outfielder short. But we'll see. We'll see who, you know, you can always have someone. Dalton Pompey can come up, and who knows, you know, when kids come up and they're ready for the major leagues. We'll see. But right now, at least they put that big bat in the middle of the lineup again, and that has to put a smile on the manager's face.
Jose's a guy, you know, everybody's always liked. You know, he's been big for the team, but I think going into the free agency, nobody really knew what he was looking for, what the market was going to dictate, and all that. And eventually, you know, they came to terms. You know, I've said before that, you know, Jose is probably one of the most, definitely one of the most motivated individuals I've ever been around. You know, he's always on a mission to prove just how good he is. And I think coming back under these circumstances he's going to be motivated that much more and he'll end up having a big, big year. You know, he was banged up a little bit last year, a couple freak injuries, you know, hurt his overall numbers. There's no doubt about that, but he still did some very big things for us. And I never count this guy out, man. He's just motivated that way more so than anybody else I've ever been around, and I think he'll rise to the occasion.
Blue Jays manager John Gibbons on with Jeff Blair this morning and Stephen Brunt. And one of the questions that Blair put to him, because we're talking like they filled one corner spot, but left field still looks like a question mark. And first base, I don't know. Not so much. What are the possibilities Bautista could end up there for any length of time?
In the past, you know, we've talked about that. I've even mentioned it to Jose. It was a couple times we were banged up at first base, and I went to him and said, "Hey, listen, if we get in a jam, we need a first baseman. You got any problem playing over there?" You know, and he said, "No, whatever you guys need." I think he actually enjoys playing a little bit of infield because he's been such a good athlete, and he likes to show everybody what he can do. So, but that's not something we've specifically talked about at this point. But there's a chance he could go over there and play a little bit if the needs are right, that's for sure. And I don't think he would have a problem with that. But that's not really what we're looking at.
Don't be confused by the contract, right? It's 1 year with a second year possibility and a third year that needs to be vetted. That's not going to happen. When you have those contracts, somebody opts out after the first year. Okay? So he's either going to have a good year, and he's going to be a free agent again, and he's going to want a lot of money and term, or else he's not going to have a good year, and then the Blue Jays aren't going to want him, and they're going to release him from his contract. But he certainly has incentive to have a big year.
Yeah, he thinks a little differently than most guys. And, he's went back and finished his, you know, got his college degrees. He's always looked out for his future. And he's going to be very successful. You know, he would have been very successful whether he was a baseball player or not, just by the way he thinks. So, I think he's come to terms with that, I would imagine, and say, "Hey, that's just the way it is. I'm going to go out and have a big year, and we'll see. See in the end how this all plays out," which I think can only benefit us.
Toronto Blue Jays manager John Gibbons. Hey, a lot of people thought Gibbons, you know, somewhere along the way wouldn't have made it this far. But here he is. He's a manager of a team that's gone to the American League Championship Series in back-to-back years. And this is a franchise that's drawing as well as they ever did before. They could not walk away from another opportunity to bring people in and turn the franchise away. They have talent coming, right? And they want to rebuild. They brought in people to do that. but they can't do that just yet. They have a pitching staff capable of, if they stay healthy, of taking them far, and they need some offense and some defense. So what's left to do?
Yeah, he thinks a little differently than most guys, and I know they're trying to address the bullpen a little bit. And then of course, like you said, the depth of the rotation. You know, we've been pretty fortunate here the last couple of years that our rotation's held up. You know, pretty much injury free. You know, there's a couple of nagging things here or there, but overall, I look back at my history as a major league manager, and that's very, very rare. You know, we got a pretty good system in place. We got some hardworking guys that are very conscious, of their health. So that definitely helps. But but you got to be lucky in this game too. And we've definitely had some of that. So hopefully that continues. But in saying that, I know they're looking at ways to create depth, just in case something does happen. And like I said, the bullpen's bullpen's such a big focal point nowadays in the game of baseball anyway. So you can never have enough of that. So we'll see. I know their work's not finished. I mean, they'll tell you that. They're always trying to, I'm speaking to Mark and Ross, trying to make the team better. There's still time left to do that.
Looking out across this town kind of makes me wonder how all the things that made us great I left so far behind. This used to be a peaceful place.
So there you go. That's what's going on with the Blue Jays. Boy, oh boy, what is it? January 18th, and it's kind of a baseball feel to this hour here. That's good. Tim Raines, Hall of Fame announcement day, should have a baseball feel to it. Montreal Canadiens trailing the Penguins 3-1 every night around this time. We get you an update on the National Hockey League fantasy stats, goals, assists, goaltenders, stuff like that every single weeknight.
And before we start, you talk about we give you every goal and assist, and there's been a lot of them the last 2 days.
Oh, my goodness.
8 games in the last 2 days, by the way.
What the Bruins game?
Well, that one.
Wow.
8 games in the last 2 days with 7 combined goals.
Yep.
Okay. And 7 teams tonight and last night. And we're not talking full slates here, right? Like, it's not like one of those big nights. 7 teams have scored 5 or more goals.
Yeah. I see 2 more games with 8 and 9 goals. Unbelievable. All right, let's start with the Penguins and the Canadiens. Ian Cole in the first period from Malkin and Hornquist. The Penguins actually built a 3-0 lead on the Habs. They got goals at 5:19 and 17:38 of period number 2. Fair from Kunitz and Wilson, and then Guentzel from Hornquist, his second assist of the night, and Cameron Gauntz. Canadiens' only goal from Sven Andraghetto. A little wraparound. Lekkonen and Emelin. With the assists on that one, Canadiens with Carey Price in goal, 24 shots and 21 saves. Just 17 Canadian shots against Matt Murray, and he has allowed 1 goal. Nathan Beaulieu, again, -2. And I was watching Galchenyuk, and I was thinking pretty quiet in his return so far. He's also -2 tonight. Radulov, Redmond, Pacioretty, Galchenyuk, Beaulieu, all with -2s tonight. Hornquist, Malkin, Schultz, and Guentzel, +2, if that's...
By the way, Justin Schultz, have you been looking at this guy's stats recently? Remember when he was kind of, will Pittsburgh bring him back? Maybe, maybe not. He's got like 24 points since December.
Yeah.
I mean, he's
7 goals, 23 assists. He got 30 points in 43 games.
That's pretty impressive. For a guy who was a borderline, should we keep him? A pretty impressive season there. Boston 5, Detroit 4. That's at the end of the second. One of those other high-scoring games. We've seen him. Frank Vetrano, 2 goals. Patrice Bergeron, 2 goals. Or a goal and 2 assists. McQuaid with a goal and an assist. Carlo with the 5th goal. Brad Marchand, 2 assists, and then a few guys with just 1. Spooner, Krug, Krejci, and Backes. For Detroit, Thomas Tatar, goal and an assist. Ouellette, Larkin, and Athanasiu with the goals. He's been on fire recently. I know everybody's talking about the coast-to-coast goal, but he seems to be scoring every night. Vanek, Sheehan, and Green with the assists. Jimmy Corral, Pold, after allowing 3 goals on 8 shots. I think Rask has allowed 4 on 15. The best goalie so far has been the backup for Detroit to come in. So, who was Mrazek? He's only allowed 2 goals on 15. That's the best performance so far. So you know it's not a goaltending clinic there.
All right, look, I just clicked on Winnipeg, Arizona, right? And the first thing that jumped out at me, all right, is that Ekman Larson is minus 5.
Yeesh. Heck,
so if your pool keeps a plus minus, you won't like that, and you won't like Luke Shen's minus 4, and there's a whole bunch of that. That is unbelievable.
Luke Shen minus 4, eh? Brings me back. Brings me back.
Winnipeg 6 and Arizona 2 in that one. If you have Dustin Byfuglien, he's a plus 4, if you like that sort of thing. Single goals for, let's see here, Joel Armia, Andrew Kopp, Nikolai Ehlers, Josh Morrissey, Jacob Trouba, and Blake Wheeler. And you know what's unique about all of those guys with a goal?
No assists.
Nobody has an assist. Perreault and Byfuglien each with 2 assists. Little, Mathias, Patan, Postma. Doesn't the Postma always ring twice? Stafford and Thorburn each with an assist. On the other side, Juris and Ekman Larson. Even as a goal, he's minus 5. It's not all. Yeah. Lawson Crouse. That's interesting. How many of the guys in this game actually played for that junior champion 2 years ago? Patan, Morrissey, and Duclair.
Duclair, yeah, no points. But
oh, my goodness. They all played on that team.
Domi.
Domi's not here. And Lawson Crouse. You got 5 guys that played on that champion 2 years ago. All right.
Only other game. Oh, actually, just to mention,
by the way, Pavlich. Smith in goal for Arizona. He gave up 6 goals.
They finally pulled them. But I'll say this. Andre Pavlich, they called him up, right? They were having goaltending issues. Let in 2 kind of softies. But since then, he's been good. He's got 23 saves on 25 shots. So far, so good for him. In Edmonton, 1, Florida, nothing. In the only other game, Zach Cashin from Connor McDavid. Man, they're playing him with studs, eh?
There you go. All right. There you go. Great show tonight. We thank you for joining us. We thank Mark Dumont. Habs Eyes on the Prize. Hall of Famer, right? John Shannon, BC Hockey Hall
of Famer. Yeah, that's the story
of the night. From Tim Raines and obviously the prof, Avi Goldberg, and Dave Kaufman to take care of the Expos situation, Expos Nation, and he's busy in London with politics and sports and you name it. He's busy. Join us again tomorrow night. Great show starting at 8 o'clock. I'll be on the tube tomorrow night on Sportsnet Central with the panel with Elias starting at 6:30. Thanks for joining us. If you missed anything, sportsnet.ca for the podcast. Bonsoir, mes amis.